Pressing issue, 2 stars in the corner. In my assembly, the elders have decided that it's not allowed for the sisters to teach, according to Scripture. However, on the basis of 1 Corinthians 11:5, they permit sisters to pray as long as their heads are covered. What should I make of this? Well, I think the first thing we can say is this, that we do appreciate that sisters should be free to pray. We've already said that. They should be free to worship, praise, thanks, give thanks. The sisters, of course, can pray. The question is, should they lead in prayer? That's the question, isn't it? And that's where we come to public prayer, which is different than private prayer. When I pray privately, I'm praying directly to the Lord on behalf of myself alone. But when a man stands to pray in the corporate gatherings of the church, he's representing now all the saints. And so God has seen to it, and we're going to, as the questioner mentioned earlier, we're going to be looking at that on night number 9. It's not by accident that I put it right towards the end of the series, so I'll have a car waiting for me at the back just in case things get too excited. But the basic premise is that the man takes the role of Christ in the assembly, and the woman takes the role of the church. She is the loved one. And so she is not to be in a position where she initiates, where she leads in the congregation. Now, this verse in 1 Corinthians 11, verse 5, that's referred to, says, the two verses together, any man praying or prophesying with his head covered dishonors his head. Any woman praying or prophesying with her head uncovered dishonors her head. So when we look at that statement, there are certain things we should observe. First of all, that there are compound problems in the church that have to be dealt with in their separate parts. 3 times in Corinthians, Paul deals with compound problems. Once he says, if you and another brother in the local church have a problem, maybe a business issue, you can take your brother to court as long as the court is the church. Okay? So he says, if you're at odds with your brother, you have the right to have it heard before the congregation, before the elders of the local. Don't go to pagans, please. You're going to judge angels someday. Don't you have these unbelievers who don't even know enough to get saved. Don't go before them with this issue. You bring it before spiritual men in the church. So it appears as if he endorses this, but then he turns around and says, you know what? It would be better if you just took it on the chin. Better to be wronged than to be wrong. Now, that's not a decision the assembly makes. Brother, take your lumps. No, if the brother wants the issue to be heard before the church should hear it. They should be dispassionate, they should be balanced, they should be unbiased, they should hear it, and they should give their judgment. If someone will not hear the church, refuses the church as a court, then it goes outside, right? There's a change of venue. He becomes as an unbeliever. And then it's dealt with in a different such situation. But in that case, Paul says, if it goes to that, brother, why don't you just take your losses? And that way you don't have this bad testimony out in the community, right? So he appears to condone one thing, and then he turns and he makes a second judgment. Likewise with eating food offered to idols. At first, he appears to condone the action. He says, suppose you go over to a new Christian's home. They've just been saved. They're poor, and they invite you over for some hospitality. When you sit down at the table, you have the sneaking suspicion that they've been down to buy their meat at the shambles. Now, of course, many people were bringing food to the temples, the pagan temples. And as you know, the idols didn't have much of an appetite. And so they'd take the food out the back door and they'd sell it to the poor people. So here's a brother. He's a new Christian. He wants to show hospitality. He doesn't have much money. He goes and buys a roast that was already offered to idols. He doesn't know any better. He brings it home. His wife cooks it up. They sit down to eat. And here you are on the other side of the table looking at this food and thinking, I wonder if this was offered to idols. You know what he says? Keep your mouth shut. Don't ask. Eat what's set before you, asking no questions. If you ask, I mean, the idols didn't do anything to it. They didn't drool on it. It's just meat. There's something symbolic here, you know, but it's just meat. So go ahead and eat it. Because if you ask and then you find out it was offered idols, then you won't be able to eat it. Because he'll be watching you now, you see. And if you eat food offered to idols, that would be a very bad testimony. So you won't be able to eat it. The whole night will be a debacle. And it may be that that brother never recovers from this. He was just trying to be hospitable, right? So it appears as if he condones it. But then later on in chapter 10, he says, what? Do you think you can sit at the table of demons and the table of the Lord? You can't. I mean, these men who would be going down to their guild hall, if they were silversmiths or plumbers or whatever they were, they would have these gatherings and they would offer the food to the idols. He says, you can't do that. You can't have a part in that. So at first, when it's dealing with stumbling a weaker brother, he says, you go ahead, don't ask. But later on, when it's your own personal situation as a mature Christian, he says, don't you dare think you can compromise with this matter, you see? So when we're dealing with complex issues, we have to deal with them in their parts. If my son threw a plate of food at his sister, I wouldn't say, son, please don't waste food. Do you know there are children starving in Africa? Right? The first issue that I would deal with is the assault and battery of a sister. And after that, I might also say, oh, and by the way, you shouldn't waste food either, right? That's a secondary issue. So now here we have the assembly at Corinth. There's a compound problem. On the one hand, the men who should be allowed to speak as the Spirit leads are getting up and showing off. And I dare say that some of them may have their heads covered. That was the big issue in those days, not whether the women had their head covered, but whether the men had their head covered, because the Jewish males, of course, would only come into the presence of God with their heads covered. So the Apostle Paul points this out, you see. And then, of course, on the other side, the women not only were getting up and professing their own glory, speaking publicly, but they were also, they were not only getting up and professing to glorify God with their lips, they were exposing their own glory with their uncovered heads. So Paul says, we got a compound problem here, we'll have to deal with it in its parts. So if I write that out as a kind of equation, any man, well, or woman, pardon me, any man or woman praying or prophesying with their head covered, uncovered, dishonor their head, right? Any, that's the same in both statements, man, woman, that's the difference. Praying or prophesying with their head, that's the same in both statements, covered, uncovered, that's different. Dishonor their head, that's the same again. So the constants are any praying or prophesying with their head and dishonor their head. The variables in the equation are man, woman, covered, uncovered. So what Paul is dealing with in chapter 11 is not praying and prophesying. He never mentions it again in the rest of the chapter. He gets to that issue in chapters 12 through 14. There's a compound problem, part that affects the head and part that affects the malfunctioning of the body. So first he deals with the head in chapter 11. He's not dealing with the malfunctioning of the body. He never again mentions praying or prophesying till we get later into chapters 12 through 14. So this section is not advocating women praying and prophesying. It's simply saying that if they're doing it with their head uncovered, they dishonor their head. So it's dealing with the uncovered head there. It's not dealing with praying and prophesying. If I say to my daughter, don't play on the street, if you play on the street and get hit by a car, I'll be very sad. Does that mean that if she plays on the street and doesn't get hit by a car, I won't be sad? No, I will be sad. She'll have disobeyed me. But I'll be very sad if she plays on the street and gets hit by a car, right? So this is it's a logical fallacy to say that if the woman's head is covered, it's okay for her to pray and prophesy in the meetings of the church. That's not being said. It's stating a fact, and then the Apostle Paul zones in on one particular issue, which is the covered, uncovered, and that's what he talks about in the rest of chapter, the first half of chapter 11. When he gets to chapters 12 through 14, then he deals with the issue of praying and prophesying, the abuse of tongues, the women speaking, and other issues that relate to the body. So I can understand how people reading that little section might get the impression that as long as the women's head are covered, that they can pray and prophesy. But keep reading. And when you get to chapters 12 through 14, all of a sudden it says the women are to be silent. They are not to speak. They are not to usurp authority over the men, and so on. Paul says it about half a dozen times this way and that way, so we get the point. So obviously the Bible does not contradict itself. Whatever that means in chapter 12 through 14 has to fit in with what's been said already in chapter 11. And my suggestion is that that's how you understand it. That chapter 11 is dealing with one half of the problem, with the issue of the covering, and chapters 12 through 14 then deals with the second half of the problem, which has to do with praying and prophesying. So, the answer to the question, what do I make of this? Well, I think maybe there are some very sincere Christians who want to obey the Lord. They want the sisters to take part. And I say, by all means, the sisters ought to take part. They ought to be praying. They just ought not to be praying audibly. Because when they pray audibly, they're taking a leadership position. And on that basis, they're not to do it. But there's no reason that sisters can't pray. We're glad for them at the meetings. We're glad for them praying. They ought to be praying. They just ought not to be praying audibly, because when they do, they are leading the congregation. They're taking the role of Christ instead of the role of the church, which they have been called to do.